Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. As we come into the winter and start looking toward the end of the year and the holidays under the cloud of this global pandemic, it can feel heavy, like something is dying. Still, death seems to have some interesting overlap with birth. What if this moment could be a signal that something new is being born?
You've been there 1,000 times. You waited for, anticipated, sweated over, worried about this moment. And now, the moment has come. A test, a performance, opening day, your wedding day, the birth of a child, the death of a parent. There's something in that moment you can never have prepared for, even though you did everything you could. And soon, the moment's over. But that which you birthed, that which came out of that moment, it is far from over. It is with you. It is with us, young, fragile, dependent. As a society, we've been there 1,000 times too, but seeing as though there are so many of us, we aren't so great at being in sync with one another when these great moments happen. Some are racing on ahead yelling, "I see it, there it is," while others are dragging their feet muttering, "Not yet," or "Never." Nonetheless, we can point at some of those births, can't we? Just this year, reports of a disease in Wuhan, China. The murder of a man by police on 30th in Chicago. An election. The announcement of a vaccine. We can name these days, too, because something was born then and there. And because of it, we know that the day after has to be different from the day before. Something new has been born. And it is far from over. We've been looking forward to this holy day, Christmas, this way. And not because this day is intrinsically different from any other day, but because it is trying to speak to us. And the words that it speaks are an invitation, not to pledge allegiance to some historical or doctrinal claims, but to see the world. No, let me change that. It's an invitation to engage with all of our hurt and pain, all our rubble and worry that lies around us. And rather than say, "Wow, what a mess," say, "Wow, something is being born." Any day we take the broken pieces and choose to build with them rather than walk away because what we had has collapsed, well, that's a holy day in my books. That's something new being born. And Christmas is about something new being born. Two weeks ago, we talked about the first part of something new being born, conceiving. Whether you sought it with all your heart or it found you even though you weren't looking for it, new ideas, possibilities, people, hopes, dreams, and needs, they find their way into your life and they take hold. They're yours now. It's where this birthing process starts. Last week, we talked about the time of carrying that new thing within you. So little you can do, yet so much responsibility you have. This week, we're talking about the big day, the birth, the emergence of that new thing into the world at last. But it isn't that simple, is it? And even though you and I may feel like it at the time, the idea that it's all over now, the baby's born, that's not quite how it works. The truth is, well, that's what we'll be talking about today. So I want to introduce Aaron Tripolino and Ann Christ to you. They both have been part of Fabric and each bring some very helpful experience and expertise to this birthing conversation. As you listen to our conversation, also listen to your own thoughts and memories of something new being born. And note how the most literal ways it happens, like the birth of a baby, teach us something about some of the equally important but not so obvious ways it is also happening. I also want to thank Mark Trelstead for his music that helps us tell this story. Aaron and Ann, thank you for joining us today. You two bring a wealth of experience and expertise to the table and are talking about this something new that is being born among us all the time. And you come from different perspectives. You're both moms and you are also dealing with this birthing part of the progression of new things coming into our world. that are kind of on opposite extremes. I'll just start with you, Aaron, because you're at that front end of this birthing process. When you think about these new things being born into the world, what are you experiencing? What's that like for you?
I'm the witness and the support for families as they welcome new babies into the world. And the more that I do this, the more that I really see my role as that witness. And absolutely, I'm able to provide guidance along the way and ideas and suggestions, but it really is being with them and supporting them no matter how things go, just being that support and creating and holding the space for them to birth their babies.
You know, being a father, I've only been in the room and helping the little I could. So I would describe myself also at best as a witness. But I would in some ways say, Chris, my wife was kind of a witness too. I mean, she was far from in control. She had a much bigger part than I did. But
right. I think even part of my role is helping everyone in the room realize there isn't anyone in control. It's not the medical professionals aren't in control. The birthing person is not in control. The doula certainly is not in control of the outcome. And it seems to be this metaphor for parenting too. Like we can't control how the baby is born and how that journey unfolds. And also you can't control another person ever, at least well, and with good outcomes.
Yeah. Have you ever had a mother in the midst of this say, stop this, I don't want to do this?
Absolutely, all the time. Or I can't do this. Yeah. Or sometimes that fear that can creep in very last minute of I can't have this baby. Like, I know what it's like to have a baby, and how can I bring home this baby to the chaos that already exists?
So which case you cancel it and everybody goes home and like the deal's off, right?
Exactly. Or you facilitate a nap and some support and some processing time, and she works through it in her own time. And then there's a baby.
There's a baby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember feeling like that when I was pregnant with Della, that having this moment of putting her crib together and thinking, wow, this is this baby inside me. I didn't know it was a she. Is so safe and protected here. And it's so easy for me to just have it inside of me. And then that stark reality that, oh my goodness, in a couple of weeks, it was going to come out and need stuff. And it's terrifying. Yeah. Because what if I'm not up to the task of providing it?
Absolutely. And there's so much preparing that I witness families doing of not, it's at very different levels for each person, how much time they spend taking childbirth ed and newborn classes and CPR classes for infants and all of this preparing. And whether you do a lot or a little, you're never really ready. It just, you never really know what it's like until you're in it.
So Anne, you popped in there a little bit, and yeah. Chris, thank you for being with us as well. And you are involved with the other end of birthing people. Tell us a little bit about that.
So as a funeral director, there's an author that is both funeral director and writer named Thomas Lynch. One of the key points of one of his books called The Good Funeral is about the role of a person like myself is getting the dead where they need to go in a very physical sense, putting them in a casket, taking them to church, getting them to burial, or whatever else they decide to do, going to cremation, scattering into the winds. But also the key component to that is helping get the living where they need to be. And it's a twofold process. You know, you're doing the very physical task of moving this body that no longer has life where it needs to go. But helping that ushering out is for that family who now has to live into this new existence of life without that very important person. Whether their relationship with them was good or it was bad or anywhere in between. But there's a lot to work on in your psyche to be without them now.
I certainly observed that when my father died. Even though I was a mature adult, I felt like I was being birthed into a world without a parent anymore. And that was a new world. I didn't know what it was going to feel like. And still surprised sometimes that I'm there.
So as you look back at and evaluate this year, 2020,
How do these observations by Aaron and Anne ring for you? One is that no one is really in control, at least if that means to guarantee a particular outcome. Try as you may, you can't stop what is happening from happening, nor make sure it turns out like you want it to. Okay with that? Or this other one. One of the big jobs of birthing, and we're going to consider death as another kind of birthing us all into a new reality. One of the big jobs of birthing is getting everybody where they need to be. Physically, emotionally, relationally. You can't stay where you were, and it may take someone with experience to know that you need to move, where you need to move, and how you can get there. I don't know, maybe it's just because I've been hip deep in this conversation about how new stuff gets born that makes this whole idea of anything new coming into my life pretty daunting. No control? Gotta shift from where I am to somewhere else, and I probably don't know how to do that? Yikes, I don't know how any of us ever let it happen at all. But there's more to it than that. Let's go back to our conversation. How does what is happening in birth preparing the mother to be a mother, even physiologically?
Well, physiologically, there are a lot of hormones at play in the body that are helping the birthing process along. And then there's a really important hormone that's released after the baby comes out. And then after the placenta comes out, this organ that's been sustaining the baby's life in utero, once that comes out, the hormone prolactin is released in the body. And it's this hormone that it signals to the body that now it's time to nourish the baby in a new way. You need to start making milk instead of feeding the baby through the placenta. And it's also this hormone that kind of helps the birthing person be selfless, like be able to put the needs of this new being in front of their own. There's people who kind of say, if we didn't have prolactin, then we wouldn't have the human race anymore, because it would be so much easier for those birthing people to just say, ah, forget that, you know, annoying little person there. I'm going to feed myself and take my shower and do what I need to do right now. But instead that prolactin helps us to put the needs of the baby first, and knowing that we'll get to take care of ourselves eventually too.
Prolactin, the hormone that clears the way for change. It's a good thing, since there's no choice with birth but to go forward. Like we observed, there's no going back at this point. But as a society, and often as an individual, we sure think we can stop the hands of time. It may not be that we doubt that the new will come. We just don't want to believe that what was will go away. Personally, I think I could use some prolactin to help me break out of my comfort zones and trust that there are growth zones that will be challenging, but not as scary and impossible as the danger zones, I imagine. Let's go back to our conversation.
Yeah, and then there's this interesting process. There are not many people that I've witnessed birthing their babies that haven't had to reach this point of surrender and just letting go, like letting go of the control in their own body and letting go of that. There's this mind-body connection that's very strong. I've seen an induction that the birthing person didn't want to happen. She wasn't ready to have the baby yet, but the medical team was advising her to have the baby. So they were trying to kind of start the process, and it just wasn't going anywhere. And after about 3 days of this, she was finally able to surrender and just have this huge just letting go. And then she had a very quick labor and had a baby.
So that's physical and emotional. I mean,
absolutely. And it's, you can hold on to how you want things to go, or in fear of an aspect of the birthing process, but ultimately there has to be a surrender. And I think that has to help us with parenting too, like surrendering maybe what your ideas were for how this child would be or look or act, and letting them be their own person. There's a kind of, I find in myself, a constant surrendering of what I think my children should be, like letting go of that and letting them and supporting them to be who they are.
So the act of birthing may not just be getting whatever it is out into the world. Birthing may be changing us so that we can be part of what's coming. The fact that it isn't easy may not just be a sad reality we have to deal with. It may be an important sign. The feeling you get when those ties to what was, long strained through gestation, finally snap as the new appears. Let's hear from Anne on this. You know, Aaron talked about the letting go, the surrendering, and that is actually, you know, physiological, or at least let me say it is physically experienced, and it's preparing us for what's next. It wasn't too many generations ago when someone died, you were involved. I mean, the person probably died in your home. Yep. And you had the body and you had to figure out what to do with it. I know we're quite a ways away from that, but you still experience it. You were telling me the other day about an experience you had with a water cremation.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. And how does that fit into, you know, I guess we call it closure, right?
Well, I think the relationships I have with different people that I work with vary greatly. And a lot of that is just because of what they come with. So you talked about how, you know, generations ago, we'd die at home. You'd lay the person out on the dining room table or in the parlor or whatever. Everybody'd come to visit. And then there'd be this community gathering to bury the body. And then it actually happened with the advent of indoor plumbing. And when we started having babies in hospitals, we started, you know, we sanitized birth. We also sanitized death. And so then you died away from home. And then there was, you know, a couple generations of people who really didn't want to be bothered with that mess, with that reality. I think there's some swinging back around. And now there's kind of this spectrum. Some people really don't want to, and you have the ability not to have to be in the middle of it. Then there's others who want to be at, you know, at the wake and the, you know, in the dining room table. They still want to do that. And so, so I'm glad that I can facilitate that for people where they want to come right along all the way through to the point of cremation, where we witness placing the body into the crematory and closing the door and even starting the machine that starts the process, or taking the body right to the cemetery and burying it right in the ground without the whole ritual of, you know, a big casket and a big fancy everything. It can be much more organic.
I think there was an era where that was sort of treated as respect. The nice casket and the formal burial site was a way of showing respect to the person. Mm-hmm. But I do think we've discovered in that we were also distancing ourselves from the experience and probably shorting ourselves on the prolactin that was going to get us into that next part of life and help us let go and keep moving some of the same stuff with birth, making it more and more anesthetic and just kind of do it and get it over with and keep the husband out of the room. But now we want you to experience this. In fact, we found out physiologically, you really need to experience this. We'd love to be giving our podcast audience all kinds of great birth and death tips right here. And hopefully they picked up on a couple, but that's not what this is about, right? What we're really talking about is something that is really big right now. And there is stuff that is being birthed in our world around us. And, you know, as you were both observing that this conceiving and caring time, which I think we're kind of in the pandemic right now, at least, while we think this is really hard, don't tell anybody that the worst is yet to come. I mean, when it's over, when we've got the vaccine and hopefully some political changes, and I'm not trying to say this in favor of one party or another, because half of you will disagree with me, but in terms of maybe some ability to cooperate and some milestones of cooperation are had around racial equity issues, then we got the hard work of actually sticking with it. I mean, of really doing it. That's going to be hard. Aaron, you're very busy birthing racial equity in the communities and the people around you. And being at mini births and seeing how hard it is and experiencing it yourself, but as a mother, but being at birth and seeing just how hard this physically is to do this and how, you know, you're saying so many mothers would just say, can I opt out right now? Yeah, I'm worried about us as a society getting to this point saying we're going to opt out right now. I sort of have a feeling, I sort of have a trust that these babies of racial justice and so on are going to get born because it's too late. We can't stuff them back in there. But the birth could be, like you're saying, you know, we can accept it. We can surrender to it and give into it and receive this child in our arms and live with it and love it. Or we can just fight it and try to keep it from happening. And what would you tell us as individuals and as a society of how do we let go of this fear and experience the pain of this birth process to have this happen? What's that look like from your experience?
It looks like being in community with other people to help support us. It's while there is so much important personal inner work without community to do it with and to support us in it, it's really hard. And I think we need to be birthing a whole new culture where white supremacy is not our norm, but we're building this new culture, and there's a big birth that needs to happen there. And
it's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt because things will die in that birth. As a couple who it's just the two of them, like that relationship is forever gone once the child is there, right? They're never just the two of them anymore. Something has to die in order for us to birth something new. And it might really hurt, but together in community and when we have the support of each other. So when I'm having a bad day and I don't think I can do it anymore, then you're there and you're like, no, we're going to keep going. And let me step in today. And maybe here's a meal so that you can have a night of rest and then come join us tomorrow. And then we can still support each other in that.
After our first daughter was born, yeah, it was brutal for Chris. But shortly after Katie was born and was in her arms, Chris said to me, although she still denies it to this day, it really wasn't that bad. I knew better because I'd been there. It was that bad. But it was already like, this isn't so bad. And, you know, I think we need to believe that we can do this. It feels horrible, but this isn't forever. What's coming is pretty good.
Right. Something more beautiful really can come out of it.
Yeah.
We think, you know, we only see what the loss is because maybe we haven't imagined what we're gaining and what that new can be like.
Right. Something beautiful is being born. Maybe this is the right time to remember what makes Christmas a holy day, a holiday. It's a birth. The birth of something new in our world that we may look back at romantically like a beautiful scene of mother and father in a glowing cattle barn in a town where they know no one. Animals, angels, shepherds, and a couple wise men hanging around with them. But get real, how could that possibly be idyllic for any birth? The Bible spent little ink on this birth, none on Mary's actual experience. But the new thing, the beautiful new thing born into our world? Well, there is this. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. I think Aaron is probably right. There is something beautiful, unknown, uncertain, and undoubtedly different, but beautiful, waiting for us. Unfortunately, there is no magical prolactin that frees us up personally or collectively, ready to accept whatever change and self-sacrifice may be asked of us. In fact, our well-refined Western reward system based on money, comfort, and fun may be tugging us away from such surrender, such reception of new creations. But there are other forces that help us lean forward. So, this may be a good time to ask, what's your vision for the future? Where are you looking for something beautiful, not horrible, in your world? If you look to your future and it looks a lot like a replay of your past or a continuous loop of your present, you may be setting yourself up for a very rocky experience with the inevitable. If your vision of tomorrow is just plain scary, then I'd encourage you to take another look at all that debris lying at your feet. Yeah, I know. 2020 has been pretty brutal for almost everybody in this whole planet. And 2021 probably isn't quite the rescue we would like it to be. You probably are looking around you and seeing the rubble of what was. But ask yourself, is that all it can be? Can it also be the building blocks of what will be? Don't be surprised if you can't quite see it right now, or you don't know what to build, or you just can't make yourself start. You were never asked to be able to do it alone. Let's pick up our conversation again. So, and Aaron kind of dished that right to you. Mm-hmm. Something's got to die. And, you know, birth and death are just, they're not only two ends of a spectrum. I mean, they're where the circle comes together. We have a birth doula and we have a death doula. How can you help us as, again, individuals and as a society deal with this, these deaths that are around us? I mean, very, very literal. The death rate in Minnesota is up 50% day to day over what it would have been these same days last year. And it's all because of just COVID. But then in the, you know, around white supremacy, around all kinds of isms and ways that we've oppressed one another. And it's so hard for us to let go of those things. What, how can you help us with that?
I'm kind of just listening to Aaron talk and this last little bit here, thinking about community. So on the occasion that I have a service, a funeral with a casket, which doesn't happen as much anymore, I'll talk with the pallbearers, the people who are going to carry the casket in and out of the church, about what they're about to do. Because most of the time, they have not done it before. And I thank them for being there, for honoring their loved one in that way, but also remind them that they might be daunted by the task of carrying this very heavy container, that they can't do it by themselves, but with the group of them, they can do it together. And it makes the work light. And then very explicitly talk about that metaphor in that you're grieving going forward. You can't do alone, but you can with the support of these people around you. Going back to what Aaron was saying about racial inequity and white supremacy in our society. But also, I think it relates to the pandemic too, in that we're being taught this hard lesson that we can't do it alone. We can't be putting ourselves first. It's about our greater community. The way we wear a mask when we're out in public is not to protect ourselves, but to protect those around us. And the way that we look to the other to lift them up is not to make ourselves feel better, you know, to get pat on the back, but to make life better for that other person. And so, you know, you talked about how this selflessness kicks in when you birth a child. Yeah, some of us are getting that lesson now, this during this birth, that we're, that selflessness has to be first right now, as we're learning, as we're rebirthing and experiencing this death and new life. And, you know, there are people in our society and there are new parents who can't get there, who still feed themselves first and neglect their children. And we've got this greater community that can step in and help them along that way. So I don't know how we teach our neighbors or how we support them on the journey to becoming more selfless or to becoming more community-minded. I think that's one of the big learnings for me anyway, is to figure out how to work with my neighbors who might not see it that way.
I think you're also a pivotal point in helping people acknowledge the death, acknowledge a loss.
So you can't ignore it.
No. Just moving on, life without that person, life without my, if as a white male, without my privilege, that's no fun. Yeah. But if I can go through, well, what's not fun about that? And why would this change? And what will I get afterwards? I've certainly found in my least most mature self that selflessness is the best way to getting what I actually wanted in the first place. I want a loving relationship with this child. I want that child to grow up healthy and strong. I want that child to want to come home and visit me when they're an adult. And the best way to do that is by being selfless towards them. You know, I want a world where everyone is treated well and has equal opportunity and is loved and valued. And I can celebrate and care for this world and the society and feel like I am free and able to move. And that's going to happen when I'm selfless about my, what I get in this world. And I make sure that we're all sharing that together.
You get so much, you receive so much when you give. It's also really important to take care of ourselves, and they can get muddy. But I'm just thinking about this group. I've been supporting a group of healers. They're all identifying as Black, Indigenous, or people of color. And I've kind of been able to be in this solidarity group, supporting them behind the scenes. And it's just amazing as I'm trying to just supporting them in doing their work of healing their own communities. I just can't even state how much I've gained out of that, how much healing that I get from doing that. And I receive so much. And it's in that building community, I get this small picture of what could be if that was our society, if it was like there was true equity and we all were really able to give and receive and support each other. It would be so beautiful.
And now you have that vision of that life. And that's worth going through the pain of birthing it, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I don't think we can really be able, we can't really get to that other side and stay there and do the hard work that follows up afterwards if we haven't done the closure of what, you know, put to rest, bury the parts of us that have to die. And to do that well, not hurry it, not do it alone, acknowledge those deaths that are there as well.
You know, you can't keep around something that's dead. You have to dispose of it, right? But in helping do it respectfully, giving it honor, even if it was the worst part of ourselves, that might go a long way towards healing in the future. Totally not related to birth or death, but I was thinking about Red Lodge, where we used to live, and when it finally got some momentum to change the high school mascot from the Red Lodge Redskins. There was so much pain in the community about that because of the people who grew up with pride in that name and in that school. But there was, you know, enough people who would finally stand up and acknowledge that we couldn't do that anymore. Whether that name was chosen during a time where we didn't consider the other, we didn't consider the meaning of the word, now we know better. So how do we move on? And sitting and listening to all that conversation and participating in that conversation, it became clear that the people that wanted to hang on to it just didn't want to acknowledge that they were wrong, because they didn't think they were bad people, right? And so how do you respectfully retire that name, that person, still hold the value of the person who grew up with pride in that mascot? How do you still honor them as a person, but also then retire this thing that needs to be dead? And we've got a lot to learn in that. You know, moving people forward, we can't just say what you do is wrong, or how you feel is wrong. We have to sort of respectfully put it away, respectfully bury it.
Right. And separate the thing from the person themselves. Yeah. Like this name is no longer helpful. In fact, it's hurtful. It doesn't mean you are a bad person. So, wow. Thank you, Anne and Aaron. This possibility of birthing something new is really a big thing. And I hope that our conversations today have helped people maybe understand how this will be a part of their lives and to not underestimate it, but also to see the promise in it. So, well, we'll be tapping into your wisdom some more, and thank you for all you're doing. And thank you for all you're doing for these families that are grieving this second birth, Anne. And thank you for all of the joy and grieving. It's joy and grieving for both of you that you're giving to these families, Aaron.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you both.
This conversation isn't over. It's just begun. It isn't an abstract consideration of something out there for other people. It's about those feelings you wake up with in the morning that are sitting heavy in your stomach, the worry that haunts you so that you try to keep busy. It's what nags on you every time you think about your job, or it follows you like a pack of animals as you look for work. It's why you may be moderating your intake of news and social media. What I ask is that you find others to start pouring over the mess in your life, in your community, and in our nation, and start working with it together. Take a risk. See what you might be able to build out of that mess. And don't be afraid to add some new pieces to it. Some learnings, experiences, relationships that weren't part of the mix before. And while there's no required time to start, now is a pretty good time. Before the cement dries. Before all the pieces are labeled by someone else with less vision. Or they get carted off as trash. And there is no required way to start. Don't worry about not knowing the answer before you begin. You don't have to have it all figured out. And that plan that you have in mind, yeah, probably won't work anyway. One step at a time. And don't look for the person in charge. There is no one person. Something is just happening. You don't control it. You birth it. Like it or not, something new is being born.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.